This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. This Matisse show at the San Antonio Museum of Art is a really big deal. Matisse, Life in Color, Masterworks from the Baltimore Museum of Art. This is a world-class exhibit. It's one of the great artists ever, and he helped create modern art. And with me to talk about that, Matisse and the exhibit and what's happening in a citywide celebration, Katie Luber is the director of the San Antonio Museum of Art, and William Rudolph, he's the chief curator at SAMA. Welcome to The Source.
Thanks, David. It's nice to be here today.
Yeah, so this is a traveling exhibit, and it's in opened this past weekend.
Yes, we just opened on Friday to our members, and Saturday was the first day for the public.
And how did that go?
Well, Friday the 13th is an unlucky day historically, but it was a very lucky day for our members because they got the chance to get a sneak peek at some of the best art that has been made in the 20th century.
I know this is the type of exhibit that normally you would expect that would go to Houston or to Dallas. This is a really big monumental exhibit, traveling exhibit. Now it's in San Antonio, and you were able to put it forward at the San Antonio Museum of Art. So how did this come to the museum?
Well, some of your listeners may remember that I moved here to San Antonio from Baltimore about 3 years ago. And during the time that I lived in Baltimore, I became quite good friends with the director of the Baltimore Museum of Art. So when they decided that they were going to put this show together and let it travel, she called me and she said, "Don't you want to bring this to San Antonio?" And I said, "You know that I do." So that was the beginning of it, and it's been a really exciting journey for us, both in terms of bringing this fantastic master to San Antonio, but also bringing an incredible level of competence to my staff. My staff is incredible at the museum, and they have proven themselves to be, this among the best in the nation. So here we have this fantastic show, and it looks beautiful, and I hope everyone will come and see it.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment about Matisse, if you saw it this weekend, you want to tell us what you thought about it, we want to hear from you. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. So, William, what do we see? What's at the exhibit?
Basically, the show offers our visitors a total walk through Matisse's career from his earliest days as an art student, where he's trying to figure out his place in the history of art, to the different stylistic progressions that he undertakes, to his triumphant style where it all comes together. Amazing color, radical treatment of form, and a sort of wonderful way of reimagining the world. And you will see paintings, you will see works on paper, you'll see drawings, you'll also see sculpture, because Matisse worked in multiple media. He is that rare artist who really comfortably moves among different types of art-making processes, and he is freakishly good at all of them. So there's truly an immersion in Matisse in the show.
Yeah, very similar to Picasso, and they were contemporaries.
They looked at each other very closely, and they competed with one another. Matisse was very aware of what Picasso was doing, and vice versa. Picasso outlived Matisse, and he says near the end of his life that in the end there's only Matisse. So he thinks Matisse is really kind of the origin of everything that comes after that in modernism and in even contemporary art today. You look at Matisse's paintings and so much of his experimentation with color, the flatness of form, the assertion of the flatness of the painted canvas. This is what contemporary artists are still struggling with today.
So Matisse was 11 years older than Picasso. So was he active in breaking down some of the barriers and creating modern impressionistic type of painting?
Well, one of the things that Matisse did, one of his great legacies, is to take color and absolutely free it from the burden, in his mind, of having to conform to visual reality. So in other words, you know how you look at the world and you say water is blue and the sky is blue. Well, we hope water is blue. And grass is green, barring environmental catastrophes. Well, Matisse was one of the first artists to actually say, no, color conveys an emotion, and I, the artist, can make something, a color that resonates with me, and it doesn't have to be beholden to the visual data that we take in. And this freaked people out at first, but it really lends an amazing impact to his work. And that's quite a lasting legacy.
And that's why the critics called the artists around Matisse, Derain, and other ones, they called them the fauve, which were the wild beasts, because they didn't play nicely with others. I mean, they did their own thing, and they expressed their new vision, and they really worked very hard to break that attachment, as William says, to the representation of the real world as we recognize it.
Right. And so, and it's not just the single color in itself, but how the colors work against each other.
And with.
Yeah. And to create a vibrancy of and taking a color wheel and turning it on its side and coming up with new ways of bringing colors to the viewer of the painting.
Absolutely. You know, anyone who's ever taken an art class, you mentioned the color wheel, and the color wheel is held up, and these are your primary, these are your secondary, and this one is complementary because it's across the color wheel from this, and there are sort of rules. Matisse knew these rules, but he wanted to change the rules. He wanted to liberate color from that. And you look at certain paintings, and I keep thinking of a marvelous painting we have of an odalisque of a woman in an interior, and she's wearing a yellow and blue striped sweater. And I start looking at what that lives next to and all of the colors together, and it should really hurt. Your eyes should recoil, and they don't. They somehow feed off each other and become incredibly powerful, incredibly wonderful. Matisse suspected something about color and what it could do that people didn't. He took a leap of faith in color, and we're seeing the happy results of that now.
So you said odalisque. What is that?
Odalisque is a term that's used. It's sort of a made-up French word for a kind of harem creature, a woman who would have lived in a harem in colonial fantasies of North Africa, sort of at the pleasure and will of the sultan. So Matisse adapts this, and in the 20s and 30s in particular, starts creating these images of languid women lounging in these heavily decorated interiors that kind of evoke sort of North African interiors.
And the word oda actually means room. So the odalisque is the woman in the room. And there's a whole series of them in the show that are just incredibly fetching. They're so beautiful.
And this was something earlier French artists had played with, like Jean-Auguste Dominique Ingres, and then a little bit later Eugène Delacroix in the 19th
courtesan.
Century. Yes, because France is a colonial power, so they're fascinated with what might be going on in North Africa. So Matisse is aware of this, but he takes it and he really makes it his own.
Okay. Well, we're talking about Matisse, this exhibit that's at the San Antonio Museum of Art, opened this past weekend. It'll be there till September 7th. We're going to continue talking about that. There's also a companion exhibit that's opening this weekend at the McNay, where the McNay's pulling out some of their Matisse and Picasso, talking about the friendly rivalry between the two artists. Our phone lines are open. If you saw the Matisse exhibit at SAMA, we'd love to hear from you. If you've got a question or a comment about Matisse or modern art, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX, and we're going to be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The San Antonio Museum of Art is presenting Matisse, Life in Color, Masterworks from the Baltimore Museum of Art. It'll be here in San Antonio through September 7th. And this is a sweeping exhibition that features almost 100 of paintings and sculptures and works on paper spanning six decades of Matisse and his prolific career. And joining me to talk about that, we've got Katie Luber, director of the San Antonio Museum of Art, and William Rudolph, he's the chief curator. So, Katie, people are coming in, but this is to buy tickets. You have to buy tickets for this. This is a little bit different.
Yes, it's a little bit different because we knew that Matisse has draws like no other, and we wanted to make sure that all of our visitors would have a really good experience of the exhibition. And so, yes, we have tickets. Our members see the exhibition for free always, and others are $15. So, but we have 15-minute intervals to make sure that, one, the fire marshal doesn't get mad at us for having too many people in the exhibition, and two, to make sure, as I said before, that every visitor can really see the works of art and enjoy the space.
So a limited amount of people can get in there at a time to see it.
Yes.
And you get timed tickets?
Yes, there are many ways of getting them. You can come to the museum and come to the front desk and take your chances, or you can go online to www.samuseum.org and click on the Matisse picture at the very beginning, and it will take you to the ticket section. And members, as I said, can get a ticket for free anytime, and others can. We have sections for Tuesdays when we have free times for general admission, so that you don't have to pay general admission as well. And we have Sunday times, and we have other times. We have times for, we have special pricing for seniors and military as well.
So, William, how is it laid out? How's the experience?
The experience is chronological. So we begin with some of Matisse's earlier works, and we move through his first experiments with paintings and sculptures into where he really starts to explore the landscape, both in northern and southern France. And then we sort of hit the sweet spot, which is where he is in Nice, as Katie mentioned, and we have all the great figures in an interior and interiors without figures, moving through odalisques, and then into some of the great triumphant late works. Now, what you're going to notice when you come through is that although it's chronological, Matisse becomes interested in certain things throughout his career. He's always interested in the body and how the body occupies space and how it conveys meaning. And he's interested in still lives, and he's interested in landscape elements, and he loves interiors, and he loves pattern. So he always will put this stuff together. So although it's chronological, you're going to really feel like you start understanding how there were things in the world that Matisse loved and to which he responded, and how those come back.
And one of those things is, we know that in 1907, Matisse went to Italy, and he saw in the Medici Chapel, he saw Michelangelo's great sculptures of dawn and dusk. And the dawn is a woman, and she's sort of curled up on the side of the altar, and her hands are bent akimbo above her head, and one of her legs is bent and tucked up. And Matisse just takes this motif of the reclining woman and runs with it through his entire career. You see it in his sculptures and the drawings and the prints, and then culminating really in the great large reclining nude, which we call Pinky, because she is, as William was saying before, as Matisse has grasped onto this idea of flat planes of color, the nude Pinky has become herself one large flat plane of color. But he has worked so hard to make sure that the relationship of her arms and her legs and her head and her back and the way that she's lying on the sofa or the divan, that it all works perfectly. And one of the things that I love the most is in the Great Hall of the museum, before you go into the exhibition, you can see 22 photographs that Matisse himself made of this painting through the course of several months when he was working on it. And you see the face disappear, you see the head move up and down, you see her back, you see her front, you see it's just fascinating to see how he made that.
So it evolved. This wasn't just like, I'm going to create this painting and it's just extemporaneous. He worked on this, and I'm going to elongate this shape, I'm going to move mm-hmm. this here.
Yes.
And so what he ended up with was a very deliberate representation that simplistic in form, but very complicated.
He makes it look easy,
yeah.
But it was not easy at all. He worked on it. He was dogged in his determination to get his vision right. And I love that about him. I love the fact that it wasn't just a simple, I mean, it looks so deceptively simple and easy, but he thought about it so much.
And Matisse is that rare artist who actually wants to share information with the public. He liked to talk about his process. He let himself be photographed. And we have some wonderful clips at the beginning of the exhibition showing Matisse in action. Because although his work, as Katie said, seems so simple, I don't think Matisse ever forgot that there were choices involved. And he wanted the public to be aware of the choices that an artist makes in getting from point A to point G or H or wherever you wind up. And so it's very fascinating that if you let him, Matisse will take you along the way and sort of show you how he gets there. And I think that's one of the things that Claribel Cohn and Etta Cohn, the sisters in Baltimore who collected him for nearly 40 years, they also really loved knowing about that process, because they would buy works in all media. So they knew how Matisse got to a particular spot, and they loved that, and they wanted to live with that.
One of my favorite stories about Claribel and Etta Cohn was when they had bought the beautiful yellow dress, which is a picture of a model wearing a yellow taffeta dress inside Matisse's studio in Nice. And then he was working on some other things, and so they hadn't bought something from him in a couple of years. And so they went to see him, and they went into his studio, and he had brought the model back and put her back in the dress so that they could actually see what he saw, so that they have the painting, which is one version of reality, and they actually got to see the way the model looked sitting there. And you know that it was not the same. And I love that story because it really is very indicative of, as William was saying, how interested Matisse was in sharing his thought process with his viewers and his patrons and his audiences.
So tell me more about the Cohn sisters and how they came to be these big collectors.
The Cohn sisters were a pair of spinster sisters who they had a fortune from a textile factory in North Carolina. And they were quite wealthy. And they became very good friends with Gertrude and Leo Stein, who were the great American expatriates living in Paris. And the Cohn sisters would go to Paris and visit all of the avant-garde kind of pop-up studios of artists. And they started collecting. And they were guided by Gertrude and Leo. And they became some of the most important collectors of 20th century modernism in America. They were extraordinary, and they were passionate, and they lived in an apartment building in Baltimore, right downtown, and their art was just jammed in, chock-a-block, into this fantastically ornamented and decorated apartment. They were artistic hoarders, exactly.
And then people would come and see it? Was it open?
No, they were there. They had some salons, but then after the death of Clarabel, then the collection went to the Baltimore Museum of Art in 1950, and then it became on public view since then. So in trust for the citizens of Baltimore and us, luckily, today.
Yeah, and so here now, eventually in San Antonio, how do you think having this Matisse, your exhibit and the one at the McNay, and you're doing these events around town, how do you think it's going to change San Antonio?
Well, I think it's really about the culmination of San Antonio. I mean, we have a Spurs win now, right? So we have number 5 championship, and this is, to me, like the equivalent of that, because this is where artists and art connoisseurs and art lovers and the curious can come and learn about Matisse. They don't have to go to Houston or to Dallas, as you said before. And to me, it's also indicative of a longer process here in San Antonio. In my 3 years, I've really become quite impressed with the dedication of San Antonio's leaders to make sure that the arts and culture are an integral part of the city. So in 1979, the founders of our museum had a vision of what the north side of downtown could be like, and they bought the Lone Star Beer Brewery, which was a derelict. It was a mess. I mean, there were a lot of feral cats, a few homeless people around, but there was no arts and culture there. Now we have the Pearl Brewery there. The city has completed the Riverwalk, so the museum reach goes on past us up to the Pearl, and we'll go on up to the Whitty Museum. And this is an incredible destination. It's the longest linear park in America, and we are right on it. And I think that it really is endemic of the idea, or emblematic, rather, of the idea that culture drives commerce and culture drives development.
So, William, after you get involved with Matisse and you've got Matisse on the brain, don't you just see it everywhere? I mean, his colors, the shapes, his images, it's been co-opted by pop culture almost.
Well, I think that's – Matisse is one of those artists who transcends the gallery and the museum setting. And whether – people know it or not, the language of Matisse has worked its way into pop culture, and particularly in advertising. In the same way, I would argue, somebody like Warhol does, and in the same way, for example, Mondrian has as well. And I think that's partly because artists who choose these very deceptively simple explorations of form and color and line and Matisse is the great example of that. I think they have a way of then the rest of the culture catches up to it. And, you know, one of the other great legacies, I think, for us to think about is not just the way we can see Matisse everywhere, and he teaches us to be responsive to color, but also to think about the Cohn sisters, because what they did, you can do. San Antonio, as Katie said, is a city of culture, and we're a city of artists, and you too can go out and visit studios and get to know artists and take a chance and collect. And maybe years later, you will have had a decades-long relationship with an artist where you really have dug in deep. It's a marvelous chance to take. I would encourage people to take it.
And tell me about Matisse Paints the Town, Katie.
So this is a really fun project that we've been working on, and we have gotten partners all over the city to participate with us, from the McNay. First of all, the McNay has been our fantastic partner in this. They're doing a show from their permanent collection about the rivalry between Matisse and Picasso, as you mentioned already, David. But we're also working with restaurants all around town where they're making drinks and dishes that reflect Matisse's influence. The wonderful florist at Uptown Florist is making arrangements using philodendrons. There's one in the museum right now that if you go, you'll see. We have the Esquire Tavern and Bar has made a drink called the Fauve. We sampled that on Friday night at our monthly art party. So the entire, and B-Cycle has done a really fun thing. So they've painted one of the bikes in the rotation a bright blue, Matisse blue, and it's decorated with these crazy colors. And if you see it riding around, if you see someone riding it, snap a picture of it and post it to your Facebook page. And we're going to be giving and tag the SA Museum. And we're going to be giving away lots of prizes and for the people who do that. So
and you have special lectures happening.
Yes, we have lectures, and we have Richard Schiff from the University of Texas, who's one of the great scholars of 20th century modernism, is giving a lecture later in the summer, and lots of films and art making activities
and food events at the museum.
Yes, we have Art Bites coming back for a great return. So we have so many really wonderful opportunities to explore Matisse in many ways.
So the best way for people to get informed about all these things?
I would say go to our website, www.samuseum.org.
All right, talking about Matisse, he'll be in San Antonio until September 7th and at the San Antonio Museum of Art. I want to thank our guest, the director of SAMA, Katie Luber, and the chief curator, William Rudolph. This is The Source on KSTX. When we come back from the NPR news break, we're going to be talking about tenure for teachers. Stay tuned.